This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora, hello and welcome to Back Chat with James King on Free FM. This is your weekly discussion program talking about local, national and international issues. If you'd like to be part of the show, just email me, jamesking2020@gmail.com. I'd love to have your feedback, your comments, your questions, your queries, criticisms and of course your observations. On the show today we talk about an organisation called Kuwai'o. I told you I'd get it wrong. How does it work and how does it help rangatahi live better lives? How does it support them? What services do they provide? What are the issues facing rangatahi and what's the organisation's raison d'etre, its reason for being? Joining us on the programme this morning is our resident expert on everything to do with mental health and well-being, Dr. Alexander Stevens II, and representing Kuwai'o, Gina and Andrew Christie. Good morning and welcome to all of you. Well, nice to have you aboard.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for the opportunity.
I think to start the show, we'll play a little track just to ease into the Sunday. This track was chosen by you, Andrew. What's the track?
660 Lost with the Philharmonic Orchestral Band.
Lovely, lovely.
Nothing I can say to who I'll be tomorrow. So tie me downward bound, throw me on the tracks, but you still won't run me over. Close my eyes, she pulled me to the side to tell me it ain't over. I'm not lost, I just want you to find me. Lord, I just want you to
I'm not alone.
just want you to find.
That was Lost, chosen by Andrew for the show today. Very nice track, actually, Andrew, isn't it?
That is. I love that track.
Yes. Okay, by way of introduction, Gina, let's start with you. What's your background? What are your roots?
Kia ora. So, Ko Jujun Tukumwa, general manager, co-founder alongside my husband of Kawaio Trust. So, my background is early childhood teaching. I spent 6 years teaching. Majority of that time was teaching in Australia, where we actually had our first two tamariki, our two boys. And then once we returned back home, I actually got into government, and I worked within MSD, a business unit that sits within there called Social Services Accreditation, and I sat in that space for 6 years. Really cool mahi, ensuring organisations like ourselves have the capability and capacity to provide their service. Some challenging pieces of work, some awesome pieces of work, met some really, really cool, inspiring people. And then along the way, been a mum.
Being a mum, yeah. Most important job in the world.
Yeah, that's
right. And the
right.
toughest.
It
and
is.
The toughest. Andrew, what about you? What's your background? What are your roots?
Kia ora koutou. Ko Andrew Tukuingwa, ko Mangitautari te maunga, ko Tānui te waka, ko Wakuto te awa, ko Wakuto te iwi, ko Ngāti Kuriki Kaukere te hapū, ko Mangitautari te marae. So my name's Andrew. I grew up in Hamilton. Done all my schooling in Hamilton, Glenview Primary, Melbourne Intermediate, then Hamilton Boys High. Grew up just loving sports, playing sports, and then met Georgina in my last year of school, and went over to Australia, lived over there for 9 years, was working as a civil pipe layer, and then moved back and got an opportunity to work with HAPE, which is now Te Ohomai, Hamilton Abuse Intervention Project. Met with the General Manager, Lila Jones, there, had a hui. They secured a contract working in the family violence sector under the ISR, or Integrated Safety Response. And, worked in family violence for 4.5, nearly 5 years. Loved their mahi, hard mahi, but met some amazing people in there, namely Dr. Alexander Stevens, doing my supervision with them, and some other awesome people, facilitators, other kaimahi alongside myself and ISR. And then prior to Kauaio, over this last year, I worked for police as a youth and whānau worker. That was challenging as well, but awesome. Got to work with some of the, a lot of our underprivileged youth, but man, what's just awesome seeing the change they make the more you work with them. You have a lot of ups and downs, but you get a lot more brightness out of it as well.
So why did you decide to set up your own organisation, Kauaio?
Kauaio, when I was working for HAPE, there was always something I wanted to do, was work alongside youth. Working in the family violence sector was quite tough, especially working with a lot of the adults. And me having a passion for sports, I wanted to give back to youth some way I could. And working within HAPE was, before I left, to go work for police, that was one of the things I did tell all the staff, that I eventually have my own organisation, youth organisation, and that was sort of the inception, sort of putting the idea in our head, talking to Gina about it. She was right on board with it, and it was a good 3-4 years before we started getting the ball rolling, getting the trust established. And
why did you think that you were the sort of person who could have a trust all of your own to provide services? What made you decide that?
I think for me it was more just passing conversation with other staff members at HAPE, when I was at police, and with Gina when I'd come home. And I'm not sure what the sort of light bulb switch was, but just talking with Gina, and then we got to COVID, and we sort of got to knuckle down and actually start putting things to paper, what we could do, what we couldn't do, some ideas, And that sort of got the ball rolling, and we eventually, Gina got us established registered trust, and we sort of just threw all our money in one basket and gave
right.
it a go.
Because it's not an area of work for the faint-hearted, Gina.
No, it definitely isn't. And people always say to us, you know, oh, you've done so well and, you know, so successful. And I always say, you know, like, we may not be rich money-wise, but we're definitely rich internally, and we'll be forever grateful for that. But going back to your question to Andrew around, you know, why we set up as well, is it was always a dream. We've looked after young people as respite carers who were attached to Oranga and Tamariki, and we always sort of dreamt, you know, like, if we won lotto, what would we do? And we always thought, oh, we'd have a hospital and we'd take in all the Tamariki and would have gardens and big graffiti boards, and, you know, and then when we soon realised that was a little bit far reached, that's when we sort of put the pen to paper around what we could do.
Yes, who knows if it's reaching too far or not? You don't know until you give it a go, do you? And I suppose you've got an experience now. You've been going for a year?
Nearly a year, 13th of March.
So, I mean, it's still early days yet, but what's the demand been like?
I think that's for you, Mel.
Huge demand. So we've got two services, and so we started up with our core YO service, which is targeted at 15 to 24-year-olds not engaged in education, training or employment. So we've had 96 young people access that service within 12
and
months.
And you're not a nationwide service. What area do you cover? 90-odd rangatahi is quite a significant number.
Yeah, it's huge. So we cover Waipa. So that is Te Awamutu, out to Porongia, borderline Tamahiri there, out to Cambridge, and then back in. So it is quite a big area to cover.
And largely rural, isn't it? And
absolutely.
So what sort of services, other services are out there in the rural area? Is it well serviced or not?
This was one of the things when we were first establishing it, just noticing there was a need for rangatahi. There was there wasn't a lot of services for our youth out there. If it was, it was either school based or it wasn't community based, so it wasn't accessed by all. And that was a big drive for us, was providing something for our hapuri that anyone could come and jump in, get on board the kaupapa and just get some support somewhere or another.
Is it a Te Ao Māori kaupapa or...?
Nah.
Is it for everyone?
A lot of our things are based off of Te Ao Māori lens, but it's definitely not just for Māori. I think at the moment we've got 69-70% of our rangatahi identify as Māori, so the vast majority of the demographic is Māori, but we do work with... All walks of life, yeah.
And it's a not-for-profit organisation. Do you take donations?
Yeah, we do take donations. We have a tab on our website, just kawaii.co.nz. But in saying that, we do try to look for small pockets of funding, sponsorships, all sorts to get by and provide any needs that we do see within the community.
Do you get... funding directly from government?
Correct. Yeah. So we are, our core YO service is predominantly funded by Ministry of Social Development under a fund called Heipo Tamarangatahi. And then we also have our whole order service, which is funded by Pinnacle House. Again, yes, they're our main funds, but to do extra, we do always source other little pots of funding. You know, DB Bryant has been amazing, and that has enabled us to make our administrator full time, for example. So we're always looking for other opportunities out there, or we were able to run our Manawhatu Ahuru program within the Te Awamutu College as of recent, and that was funded through Ministry of Youth Development.
So you've got a number of ministries involved in what you do.
Yes, we do now.
And how do you find that, dealing with government institutions?
Oh, that's Gina's.
Of course, it's marvellous.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely. I think especially at the moment we are in a time of change, and that brings huge change. We were originally contracted for 18 months, so that brings us to the 30th of July. So we're just in the process of going through a rollover contract application with Ministry of Social Development now. We have pretty much had the verbal that, you know, we should be okay. However, there's definitely negotiation between budget.
Right.
And my understanding is there is no extra funds, so it's just working with that, which brings challenges. I mean, we've got 9 staff in total. We've got 5 staff that sit on our core YO side. We do need another FTE.
That's full-time equivalent.
Correct. And I mean, you know, what do you do? Do we create a wait list, which we don't want to do?
Mm.
However, we've worked really hard to provide a very quality service, and by no means will we risk not continuing that.
Right, right. Yeah. So how do rangatahi who come to you, how do they present?
They all come in under just all different walks of life. Some haven't been to school since they were 13. 12, 11. Mm. Some come from broken backgrounds. Some come from wealthy families as well.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
So it's no indication of whether you're going to be a good person or a bad person.
Exactly.
And misunderstood or...
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest things, is just them being misunderstood or understanding their pathway right now. A lot of them obviously aren't going to school. That's why they'll be engaged with us, not engaged in education. But, we do get the either side of the coin. I'd say, like, we get educated at rangatahi, but then we get rangatahi that don't have the numeracy literacy skills. We get rangatahi that are street smart, yet we get rangatahi that are very shy and just got a lot of mental health, whether it's anxiety or depression issues, social inequity.
Yes. Mm. Your organisation's called Core YO. What does that mean?
So Core YO is who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Yeah.
And the big reason we did call it this, me and Georgina were going down to Fielding, I think, one day, and I was just talking about Core YO, who am I, and Gina stopped me and she's like, oh, what was that word? And I said, oh, Core YO. And she's like, oh, I love that. I think that should be the name of our organisation. So, yeah.
She's smart, isn't she?
She is, yeah. You know, that's why I married her.
Yes, yeah. You're smart too.
Sometimes. but yeah, so that's how we ended up going with the name Core YO. And for me, it was always a big thing for, especially our Māori rangatahi, understanding who they are, where they're from, their self-identity. But not only Māori, it's also Pākehā, our Pacific whānau.
Yes.
Everyone needs some form of understanding of who they are and where they come from.
True, mm. True. Identity plays a key role in being able to establish a footing going forward, isn't it?
Definitely.
Especially in Māori culture, yep. Where whakapapa is all important. How do you deal with rangatahi who are disconnected from, say, their whānau or their iwi, hapū, and things like that, that are isolated?
For me, it's I see our service where we're just a small pocket within their lives, or a small shining light, I'd hope to see. And for us, it's always when they do come or enter our service, when they come in, they do feel the aroha, or they do feel welcomed within our space. Every time they're with us, they do feel a part of a family. We make them feel welcome. We offer them kai, we offer them drinks, whatever we can. So if we can sort of instill those small needs, then hopefully it opens up their mind to wanting to expand more for themselves.
Let me bring you into this, Alexander, because you've been listening intently.
I have.
What are the issues, or what are some of the issues that face small organisations in rural areas?
So I think that there's two things to consider. One is always that funding is the life force, unfortunately, regardless of organisations, whether they be in urban and rural areas. I certainly think, having looked at a number of services, and we've seen this in the Waikato region, services like birthing units, like within the Huntly areas, for example, closing down has had substantial effects on local communities. So when you take what I think is something like as valuable as the heart of a community service away, it does have long-term consequences. What we also know in latest research is that young people in rural areas have very different wants and needs for those in urban areas. So in urban areas, for example, one of the top three things that they often think about is climate change, geopolitical.
Really?
Yeah, areas, and then connectiveness. But then if you look at rural areas, it really is about connectiveness. Impacts on self as well as other whānau, and actually also thoughts about getting ahead and what does that look like. You know, can they get ahead within their local rural town, or do they then look at going away somewhere else and trying to make it there? And then how does it impact on their family, because many of our young people want to continue to support family on some level. So they're very, very different. And yet, going back to your initial question, services like CoreYO are vital in order to be able to help our young people kind of make sense of where they're going.
Well, they were saying that they have over 90 rangatahi they deal with. And I didn't think there were 100 people in TA.
You'd be surprised, James. I think there's 101 people in TA. But and actually, to be fair, CoreYO's, I think, is coming up to your one-year anniversary very soon, and I think they had their own dreams and values of how many people they were initially going to work with, right? And then you've actually extended.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
So we originally, when we gone for our contract with MSD, we'd proposed that we would have worked with 60 rangatahi over 18 months. So
you've exceeded that.
We've definitely exceeded that.
Yeah.
Probably to our own detriment in some ways for funding. But like I said before, what are we meant to do? Say no, we can't see them. So we just work out ways. And I mean, you know, our team lead, she shouldn't have a caseload or 0.5, we like to say, but she's at full capacity.
The problem though, in, forgive me, I'm a lay person, to keep expanding your service provision to more and more rangatahi where you aren't getting any extra dollars, doesn't that, you know, but don't people say, oh, well, if you can get a, do this much, we'll keep you on this much. Is that something that's happening or no?
Well, for me, that's why I did marry a smart wife.
Yeah.
So I can leave it to our general manager, who is Georgina.
Yeah.
And she does take a lot of that pressure away from our frontline staff. We can just focus on the mahi, what's needed on frontline working with the rangatahi. And she develops a lot of those networking relationships and makes sure she gets smaller pots of funding if required. And, yeah, she takes a lot of the pressure off of our frontline staff to do the mahi that we do.
Alexander, their raison d'etre, or the reason for being, is being, belonging, becoming.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Oh, I think it's any journey for a young person to try to figure out who they are and where they're going. We know that there are, you know, us growing up, right? What are you, late 70s and I'm early 80s? The needs of
don't think we needed to point that out.
No, but, you know, I do think that the needs of us growing up is very different to what we have now. And we only have to look at things like technology, for example. Those things didn't exist back in the day. You know, wants and needs of wanting to be connected via social media is something that young people face regardless of the areas that they're in, and so those core values of what CoreYO are all about are actually integral to kind of figuring out where do they want to go, because by the time you're 16, 17 you've already missed the boats on lots of other things. And so in some ways I kind of see CoreYO as kind of supporting and providing that manaaki to find ways forward, whether it's things like giving young people the ability to study towards a license is pretty critical if you're in the rural area.
It's practical, it's interesting, it's, you know,
it makes sense if you're in the middle of nowhere.
Absolutely.
And we also know that with our young people, that often their first offence with the police, especially in those areas, might not be having a license, and so it's not something you want to go down a path. So being able to kind of navigate and steer in ways that help enhance who they are, irrespective of age anyway, but certainly for our young people, helps to set them up for the best possible futures.
So how do rangatahi and their families, their whānau, how do they access your services?
So they can go on our website and send us an inquiry through our little box on one of the pages there around contact. If you click on the contact tab, they can ring our free 0800 number. They can email us directly into kiora@coreyo.co.nz. Or, of course, by just coming and visiting us. We're located on 15 Albert Park Drive, Te Awamutu. We always welcome whānau to come in and have a kōrero and meet our team.
Excellent. And there's more than one street in TA. That's,
that's poor TA, James. But, yeah, it wasn't you. It would have been me having a go at it.
So. Yeah. So let's have a look at some of the issues that you engage with. I went on your website, very good website, and you have a list of challenges like poverty, community and whānau safety, whānau support, education, relationships, self-identity and so on. Explain to me what each of those components mean to a child, a rangatahi coming through.
I think that relates back to our values of being, belonging, becoming. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with poverty or the underprivileged whānau, socioeconomic whānau, they may not have everything, but if we can enhance the richness of life, then, you know, it just depends on how you look at poverty in itself, whether it's monetary or poverty or how you're feeling or wider space or...
Poverty of culture.
That's right. So we just try and enrich them in any way possible, whether it is Pūtea related, then our main aim is obviously to get them back into education, training, employment, so help them that way. Community and whānau safety, we're heavily involved with a lot of community stuff, whether it's with Te Awamutu Sports, the local rugby club.
We've got, you know, BFT, we've got many of other organisations that we're connected with, and we're really big on that and working collaboratively, because we can't do everything, we don't want to do everything, so it's sticking to what we're good at and accessing all those other services. And so that's when we come together, like we've recently been a part of Puni River Care Open Day and community events. So, that's a big one for us, is always working alongside different kaupapa as well.
So what of education and relationships and that big one, self-identity, where do they stack up?
Every time they come in, we always try... So part of our assessment, we have to understand their... gain certain data or information for our contract with MST, so that requires their name, sex, agenda, ethnicity, and we just try to expand on really what the assessment does, that sort of gives us a guideline of the plan we create to moving forward with
them.
That's
the assessment from the child themselves?
Yes, we do it with them.
So they are equal participators in the outlining of the program, they will...
Yeah, with our assessment, for me personally, I always just literally ask them the question, if they don't have an understanding or something, and then I'll try to put it into layman's terms or terms that they'll understand, and provide them with some forms of hints so they do understand what the question actually is.
Right.
And, I leave it to their own words. I do get some colourful language, but, you know, I'm not going to beat around the bush. That is who they are. I'm not trying to change them. I'm just trying to make them live a better life and achieve all that they can achieve.
Well, you change them in a sense. You give them hope. Sure. You give them purpose. You give them a sense of belonging. You know, you are looking to change them. Perhaps not the core of them, but, Alexander, am I right in saying that, or...?
I think any opportunities to support our young people to find a way of figuring out who they are in relation to their whānau, their community, and then the kind of, you know, everybody else is vital. Mm. And I also think, having worked with a number of adults over the years, that in that process of being a young person really is a critical time where decisions are often made, sometimes off the cuff or in support with mentors like and services like CoreYO, which can then make the difference, sometimes quite vastly, the difference between them either finding a way forward in which they are able to succeed and thus bring other people with them on that journey, or perhaps, you know, walk down a dark path where they end up accessing, you know, drug and alcohol services later on, end up seeing me as their therapist. So, you know, having advocated in youth spaces, services like Rainbow Youth, like 20 odd years, and other, you know, youth services, it's what I keep coming back to. You know, it's a critical aid that's often overlooked and yet really does shape up future New Zealanders in this country.
It's huge, and it's often the last thing that people think about when it comes to our rangatahi, that they are stepping off into the future.
Yes.
And when you're 11, you've still got a ways to go, but when you're 15, 16, 17, whatever, you're right on the cusp of adulthood, and that's where some of your decisions will be not terminal, but certainly carry much more weight than if you were making the same decision back when you're 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever. Mm.
Mm. I agree. That's why things like, you know, getting a driver's license, attending courses, you know, upskill so that you can potentially get a job sooner rather than later. All these things, I mean, research is clear about this, enables you to find better ways forward. You know, my mentee, Irie, is a great example of having lived in Kaitaia. You know, there were limited options. He himself had a number of challenges growing up, you know, worked in the Kumara fields because that's what you kind of do.
Yeah.
Where it's expected, you know, as a young person, and then decided as a younger adult to then come into Auckland and do something different, then got mentorship to help and find a way forward. I've often thought about, you know, his resilience and his whānau support, and thought, what would it look like if you'd had someone that had intervened a little bit earlier on, and maybe how much different his path might have been, you know.
I suppose there must be success stories, and I don't know how you base that, you know, how you determine what a success story is or not, only been a year in the making. Can you think of, without naming people, can you think of a kid who's, you know, gone from this to that?
Oh, absolutely, James. We've actually got many success stories now, and how we capture that is by interviewing them on a regular basis, and that's actually how I report back to our funding bodies.
Yeah.
But one in particular that just really hits home for me is she was one of our first referrals. She'd been disengaged from school since she was about 12, 13 years old. So when we first got her, she was 15. Going on to 16. She had been traumatised, living within a home of family violence, sexual abuse. You think of it, she's probably been through it. Yeah, addictions, right. All sorts. So this young girl turns up to our office, you know, no shoes at this time. It was coming into winter. She was cold, head down, wouldn't look at you. And today she actually goes on to, she's completed her first course at NZMA, passing with flying colours.
Wow.
As of last week or the week before, she would have started her second course. She completed graduation with us a couple of weeks ago. She has got her license. She's looking at ways of moving out of her current living situation. She's since been to Taupo, she's bungee jumped, she's been to Queenstown. She is just living life.
Yeah.
And when she comes in now, I even look back at photos from when she was first engaged with us to now, and oh my gosh, she is a different girl, eh?
Add on to that, yeah, I totally talk of that with Gina, but even her journey with us has been quite a up and down journey as well. So she went through a phase there with her current boyfriend. He was actually grooming her at the time, so we went through the court processes, and he ended up, I think he's still going through court processes now, but they're no longer together. That was another big stressful situation we had to deal with her. But even every time we've seen her over the last, just before she started her program at NZMA, whenever she did come into the office, she openly come up to everyone, says hello, greet you nicely. Whereas when she first come in, you couldn't get a hello. Your head was down. You might get a wave. But no, yeah, she can hold a conversation openly with adults or with anyone around. Sometimes gets a bit too familiar and tries to vape inside the building. So you have to correct her on that. But yeah, there she is, definitely one of our huge success stories.
Yes, yes, very good. Look, that's a good opportunity for us to take another quick music break. I have chosen here Bulletproof by Stan Walker.
Listening. I don't drive no fancy car. Need a few more zeros in my bank account to buy me wine. And I don't think I'll fly to Mars. 'Cause the price tag on a space flight I heard is a hefty sum. So we should just slow down, take some time to look around. Beauty in the world today, but we don't pay enough attention to concern with the material and how much we own in expensive clothes. Life's got so much more to offer, that's my point of view. 'Cause I don't have a lot, but what I've got I'll share with you. LA or a home in LA, I doubt that's coming soon. And I don't think I'll get to Bali Islands to call my own. And besides, who wants to live it up in paradise alone? So we should just slow it down, take some time to look around. There's beauty in the world today, but we don't pay close enough attention to concern with the material and how much we own in expensive clothes. Life's got so much more to offer, that's my point of view. 'Cause I don't have a lot, but what I've got I'll share with you. I don't know it all, but
we're talking to Dr. Alexander Stevens II, Gina and Andrews. And Andrews? What the hell are you on about, man? Gina and her offsider, Andrew, her husband of many years standing. One thing I wanted to check out with you is, when it comes to notions of health and well-being, what does that mean and what does that look like? Alexander, you first.
So the Mental Health and Wellbeing Commission last year released a report of which the Commissioner Karen Osborne talked about the importance, especially with our young people, around connectiveness now more than ever. What we know is that well-being is sometimes overused, like the word trauma, so we have to kind of hose down and actually understand what does it mean. So loved, supported, part of a greater whole, and meaning and purpose would be how I would define well-being for our young people.
Yep.
Once you kind of lock and load those elements, then you can look at what does that look like for you, you know, future forward. But none of that can happen unless you can feel those particular values. So that's what the commission was saying. And having read it, I actually agree. If we had to just use one word, it would be connected, feeling part of something bigger.
Does that resonate with you, Gina?
Oh, absolutely. Totally.
And when we talk about health and well-being, what sort of things do we need to think about in terms of ensuring our rangatahi have that locked and loaded? Because it's a dangerous age, isn't it?
Well, resilience is key. And looking at our young people, resilience, like I said, it's dependent, because urban and rural areas, our youth are very different. Different doesn't have to mean bad, it just is. You know, there are different services, public transport, that kind of thing. So if you've looked at TA to Hamilton's, what, 25, 30 minutes, depending on how clear the road is. But if you're a young person trying to access, say, a youth service, that you'd have to then potentially get a bus, and I don't even know how frequent or often those are.
Not very frequent.
No. And so therefore there are limited opportunities. Mm. And so resilience is key. So how do we do that? I think like services like CoreYO have an open door policy. And as you know, James, my co-papa as a clinician is that every door should be an open door, so that no matter where people go to, whether it's their GP service or other social services, being much more transparent around how do we help people get through without making it so complicated would be helpful to help with wellbeing.
I think it's important for the services to go to the people rather than waiting for the people to come to the service. And as was mentioned earlier on, you know, the rural sector is not heavily catered for. So what's wrong with clinicians going out to them, you know, to a, I don't know, a citizens advice bureau in the neighbourhood where you can have services?
Yeah, so we know, so this is my own, so I'll make my own standpoint, eh? So we know that within things like district health boards can often see themselves as white ivory towers with the expectations for people to go to them, not the other way around. Well, it's true, and having worked there, I know this. I absolutely know this. And one of the other challenges, I think, is just the huge caseloads.
Yeah.
You know, like we talked about mental health, we talked about mental well-being. Actually, those things are quite big in rural areas, and having worked at both an urban and rural setting, sometimes you can be swamped. That's not to say that there's no excuse to engaging actively with communities, because I actually think that's how you reduce not only your own stress, but get a sense of what is available and what can you meaningfully do. One of the biggest challenges, for example, facing our young people is, especially in rural areas, is thoughts of suicide ideation, you know? And so the sooner that we support young people, the sooner that they're much more likely to get ahead.
Specific. On top of that, so part of our service as well, we have a whole order team where we have a practice nurse, a mental health nurse, and a whānau worker attached. So anytime we do get rangatahi or whānau come in, one of the priorities for them is to come do a health assessment with our practice nurse. From there, she'll sort of gauge their needs, their whole order needs, where to from there. But also gives them opportunity to speak with our mental health nurse, Bex, as well. So we do sit down a lot and kōrero about what needs we're identifying and how can we fill a gap for that.
It's often difficult too when you're a teenager. I remember dealing with counselling services when I was a teenager. And I hope they're much better today. But it's very difficult sometimes to identify for yourself what's needed. You don't know what the... You know what I mean?
Well, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. And so how do you get past that initial...
My thing around that too is we've got to have options. Mm. It's not a one-size-fits-all, you know. Like, counselling really suits some people. Some other people it's not. So whenever I have interactions with youth, and particularly our kaimahi, it's finding your person. Mm. You know, it's finding that person that you can confide in, whether it be a counsellor or a supervisor, psychologist. You know, you've just got to find your person.
Are you finding it difficult to get people into services?
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, like what Alexander was saying, is that services are just so swamped.
Yeah.
Particularly specialists, you know, psychologists, even accessing counselling. Mm. It's hectic out there. And I think, unfortunately, it's only going to get worse.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, mental health assessments has got quite a bit of a hold up as well, especially for Hamilton.
Right.
I don't know if we have any in Te Awamutu to access that. We have Rural South, but I don't know if they do rangatahi assessments per se.
Yes.
And so a lot of my ones or rangatahi that I've had, the only way they've had mental health assessments has been court-directed going through YJs. So.
Right, yeah.
That's the value of having, though, community services like YJs, because when you've got your bigger brand names out there, which I'm not going to name, funding tends to go towards them because they're really good at media and plugging themselves as being the be-all and end-all.
with love. And yet, what we know is that they often miss those crucial areas, like Te Ao Mutu, for example. They just don't come out. So I think that what funding is available, we should actually be using to support local initiatives and ideas, especially if they work. I mean, we talked about successes not so long ago. Mm. And one of the things that I think is a success is that they're still here almost a year later,
right,
which tells you that there is a need and want in order for them to do what they do. Mm. Communities, especially small ones, know when they're being lied to and are really good BS detectors, and yes, I think that they'll only come back if there's some kind of brand or product that they trust. And in this case, it's not only the staff but also what they're offering. That's why I suspect not only are they successful, but fingers crossed will continue to thrive.
I hope we do get this rollover funding, and that's, you know, from my point of view, can be frustrating because you sit in my seat being like, well, you know, we've absolutely smashed our outcomes. And actually, the outcomes are a great tick box for the funders. However, it's everything that we do prior with the rangatahi to meet those outcomes that it's really hard to capture.
Such hard work.
It is hard work,
and I don't know that those people in the ivory towers of Wellington really recognise that it's hard work and big work and important work. We had $1.9 billion pledged to the mental health sector a few years ago now. Where's that money gone? It certainly doesn't seem to have gone very far in terms of the rural sector, even in terms of, the idea that your child is brought into the mental health sector via the cops is terrifying, really, because you shouldn't be dealing with cops at that age.
No. That is something, you know, we also do support young offenders.
Mm-hmm.
Something in that space that is really cool for us is all the young people that have previously offended. Since being engaged with our services, only one has re-offended.
Really? Out of how many?
We would have had seven to ten.
Yeah.
So that's a huge one. And even police interactions, like we talk to our local youth aid officers and so forth, and definitely interactions with young people that they were dealing with have absolutely lessened since being engaged with our services.
Mm.
When I've worked with adults, James, often they talk about certain programs that they've been involved in, like you had your big brother and other services up in Auckland, and they've often spoken about as adults that there were like critical moments that people had intervened and stepped in, and that looking back in terms of accessing me, it's almost like they're then looking for the next step in terms of way forward. And one of the things I was just contemplating as I was listening to you two was I actually wonder also if that's what leads perhaps, well, in my area anyway, more men to go get help because they've already had someone intervene on their behalf, so they're actually used to asking for help compared to people that haven't. And that's why I keep coming back to this idea with our young and our elderly face similar kinds of things in terms of being seen, heard and valued, and having their voice. And yet what I know is that our young people really are critical to this country.
Mm-hmm.
And if in order for us to thrive as a collective, we really need to be doing our bit. I know that for many listeners, you know, they might be saying it's not the role of the government to fund our young people, but I certainly think, though, that there is a purpose for funding to exist and being able to utilise it in meaningful ways, like services that are available in rural areas.
The services that are available, would you consider yourself an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff or at the top of the cliff?
Or are you both?
It is a bit of both, especially with our whole water team attached to it. We ideally do want to see us as the ambulance at the top of the cliff. Mm. We always came in with our kaupapa being a holistic approach where we wanted to identify and eliminate those risks before they actually happen, instead of waiting for them to happen. In saying that, I'll lean a lot more to top of the cliff for our Rangatahi or Core IO service. Mm. And just because our whole water team deals with a lot more at-risk people, that a lot of times they're definitely up the bottom, at the bottom of the cliff and top of the cliff.
Right, right. Because it is, as you say, a little bit of both, isn't it?
Mm.
People will listen to this and think, self-identity, what is that? Not only what does it mean, but what does it really matter? Is it one of those softly type of, ephemeral, intangible things? But a self-identity is really important growing up, isn't it?
Definitely. Hence why we did name a Kawaio. My thing for rangatahi is if you know who you are, you know where you're from, it builds that self-confidence and gives you, I feel...
Pride?
You can become a lot more pride, and then you become a lot more accountable to your actions, or just a lot more accountable to yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. An example of that actually is a recent program we ran within Te Amuru College, and a lot of the feedback that we do a kōtero group and a tama group, 10 each time. And a lot of the feedback we got was, you know, my pepeha has come back to me. I know where I come from. It's going to be something that I continue to practice. And I actually think if we can walk alongside and help our rangatahi around self-identity, of them knowing who they are, whom they belong to, it gives them this abundance of confidence. And
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
From the deans, they've actually said that, particularly about the boys we worked with, is that they may have been seen to be a bit more, like, actually arrogant towards others. And I explained that of them gaining that self-identity, it does it that confidence. It comes in an abundance.
And then what it also does, James, having worked with a number of men that have been uplifted through, like, children and young persons and things like that, is that it also exposes people to careers that they might not have even known had existed. So, like, you know, what is a youth worker? What does a nurse do? You know, we have here a couple who have also created their own business, so here's an opportunity, albeit within the social sector.
Mm.
And so when I was lecturing in both social work and counselling, a lot of those people that had come forward were because they had gone through the system as young people. They had some really decent, you know, youth workers or social workers, and then they wanted to reciprocate it as adults and go back to work with you. So I think that there's the stuff that you see within organisations like Kawaio, and then there's that generational stuff that isn't seen, like inspiring them to find a way forward and committing back and investing back in the community in different ways.
It is an investment. It is an investment in the community. And I just wonder if the broader community recognises how important this work is. Because a lot of times people go, jail is where these people should be, and lock them up, throw away the key, borstal, boot camp.
Very quickly, one of the things that when Andrew had mentioned, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've spoken to the couple about this, but, you know, had a vision of setting it up, and I just thought, actually, I'd love to help in any way that I can to see this come forward, because even in my area around sexual violence recovery, there's so few of us, but actually having us something rather than absolute nothing is vital, because then that's 90 young people that might not have necessarily engaged with you, and then who knows where they would be, you know, from now, if you think about the work that they do.
Well, 90 children or 90 rangatahi is 90, at least 90 families.
Yes, that's right.
And those 90 families are at least, you know,
extrapolated out.
And it, the impact could be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I know people say, even if it's just one, but 90?
Yeah. And that doesn't even include our holder service. So we've actually had, on top of our 90, we've had a further 83 access our holder service. So we're nearly at 200.
Gosh.
So it's huge.
Yeah.
47 of the just over 90 that we've serviced already in the Kawaio side have also accessed our holder side for, further mental health assessments and so forth.
I think when people talk about services being for X number of months or X number of sessions, you see that a lot with psychologists, or counsellors. You've got X number of sessions. I really struggle to find out why that is supposed to work.
That is the beauty of our service, James, is that we don't have that. We're not a program based. We're not, you know, come and join our 4-week course. You know, your whānau has experienced 30 years of trauma.
Yeah.
And we're going to fix you in this time frame. We say to them, you know, you can be with us for as long as you need. You know, that long-term goal is to transition them into some sort of training, education or employment. Once they've gained that, we actually sit them in a rōpū called pastoral care, and they sit there for a minimum of 3 months, so we can ensure that that placement is sustainable.
Yeah.
We have now placed 35 into further training, education or employment. Out of those 35, we've only had 2 end employment, and that is just due to casual mahi and not having had that permanent contract. But it's, you know, they've now been able to gain that first case of employment, and it won't be, yeah, I don't imagine that they'll be out of mahi for long.
Well, we've got a minute. Alexander, do you want to add to anything?
Yeah, I'll just keep saying it again and again. I mean, Whitney Houston said, I believe the children are our future. And I actually believe that too, because actually they're the young adults that will probably be doing jobs and functions that will impact on us as we kind of head towards retirement, James. So wouldn't you want to give them a bit of hope, a bit of love, and a bit of a reminder that they're actually really cool little human beings that are about to step into adulthood?
Into the big wide world.
Yeah.
And I wish you luck for Kuo. I told you I'd get it wrong. Great having you aboard. Now, we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having us, James.
Thank you, Kia ora.
That was Andrew and Alexander and Gina from Kuo. Brings us to the end for another day. Keep talking, they tell me it's healthy.
Episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.